This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for August 11th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, Smithfield Foods says its earnings more than quadrupled in the latest quarter in the wake of a company reorganization. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason is down in southern Illinois where modern no-till agriculture was introduced to the world. And the folk from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago will be by with the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter, September wheat, 623 and 3/4, down 5 and a half. December settled at 637, down 5 and 3/4. Soft September wheat settled at 546 and a half, down 2 and 3/4. December, 562 and 3/4, down 3 and a quarter. September corn settled at 356 and 3/4, up 5. December, 368 and a quarter, up 4 and 3/4. March, 381 and a quarter, up 4 and 3/4. July, 396, up 4 and 1 half. August soybeans settled at 1314 and 3/4, up 30. September, 1108 and a half, down 5 and a quarter. November, 1073 and a quarter, down 11 and a half. Go out to May of 15 at 1097 and a quarter, down 10. August soybean meal settled at $400.40, up 290. August soybean oil settled at 34.88, down 56. August live cattle settled at 152.45, down 10. October 150.85, up 85. August feeders 217.27 and a half, up 195. September 217.02 and a half, up 230. August lean hogs 114.45, up 22 1/2. And those are Monday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lunner's weather highlights, he says that U.S. Midwest crop weather over the coming week will be mostly good for crops, but there will be pockets of net drying that may result in some areas of mild stress. Temperatures will be warmer for a little while late this week and again later next week, and that could stimulate faster drying rates for several areas. Subsoil moisture should carry crops for a while if rainfall diminishes, but temperatures will need to stay seasonable to conserve the moisture as long as possible. Weekend rain was not very great in eastern Iowa, southeastern Minnesota, or Wisconsin, and these areas will dry down this week, raising a little more stress and concern over crop conditions until greater rain evolves late this week and more likely during the weekend. The U.S. Delta and southeastern states received welcome rain during the weekend, bolstering soil moisture for better summer crop conditions. Parts of Alabama, Mississippi, southern Georgia, and northern Florida have been too dry recently. Temperatures in the U.S. crop areas this week will be near to slightly below average early this week, near to slightly above normal late in the week, and a little cooler again during early to midweek next week. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Afternoon, Dave.
Markets were really all over the place today.
Yeah, we saw some activity take place from position squaring and even the Goldman roll kicking in. It was fairly active, a little bit for the bull and the bear both, per se. Of course, the main event for the agriculture side and the grain sector will be the 11 o'clock report tomorrow morning, and that'll give the market some direction to go from.
And we'll delve into that in just a minute. But first, let's talk about that August soybean contract once again. Up 30, and it's been up the last several sessions.
Well, just reflecting the tight whole crop supplies, not a whole lot of volume in that particular contract. You know, we'll probably see some more swings like this tomorrow in that contract here as it nears its end here fairly quickly. And the grain industry is not basing any bids off of it, per se, so it's a matter of a speculative playing through here, see who's left here as we finish that up. You know, historically, whenever a contract goes off, the function of the market, from some trader's point of view, is to go and try to fill that lead chart gap, for say. But for the most part, we've got a tale of two crops. You know, we're wrapping up the tight old crop situation and looking for a fairly large new crop situation.
So the lead gap's going to be $2 plus. And I wonder, does September have any upside just on that theory that you're talking about?
Look, it could firm or remain firm. You know, the bean situation is relatively tight, so we'll see how soon beans come to the marketplace here this fall. But two, the August is not finished out either. It could very easily drop a dollar in the final trades before it closes.
All right, let's then turn our attention to corn, where it feels like a six or eight cent move is huge these days.
Yeah, we're starting to see some aggressiveness, and it seems huge because it's just all at once. We'll move one direction once and just kind of sit there, and we'll move another direction and just kind of sit there. You know, the corn crops, traders become a little bit more comfortable with it from the point that you can actually physically see kernel fill and see where we are there. Whereas the beans, you know, we still got some time to go whether these pods hold together or not. But early indications are there's some real strong areas that are have got potential to just shatter some production prospects, whereas other areas have missed some moisture or have been fighting too wet conditions from day one, and they're going to struggle. But on the average, the trade's dialed in to see a fairly aggressive production number tomorrow.
What kind of production numbers are we talking about?
Well, the trade's hovering in this 170, 171 area. Like we mentioned before, seems like everybody's got two sets of number. Well, what's the final number we're going to see later on this winter, and what's the number the we're going to see for the August report? So they got really two guesses at it. The thing we've been watching, or the concern, is some of these managed money accounts, the large speculative accounts, some have dialed in a 177 yield. Well, shoot, they might be kind of disappointed in not seeing that big of a number tomorrow. And even though you could probably have a big production number, it might not be big enough for some of these traders, and they might want to cover. So there's several things that could happen here off this report to keep it fairly choppy.
And in the soybeans, what will make it choppy tomorrow?
Well, once again, it'll be you know, whether or not they address the issue of, you know, harvested acres, square that way by a tad bit. And, of course, you know, will they get aggressive on the yield or not? Ideas are they'll probably wait till September. But who knows what they're going to come up with. The bottom line on all these numbers is we're going to have some supplies to work with this fall and this winter. It's not going to be a tight situation. So the numbers after the production side that they're going to watch is the demand side. We need to make sure that they recognize that these lower prices will hopefully stimulate some big demand numbers.
And do you think that USDA will say low prices will cure low prices when we still have a number of issues, especially in corn? We have this little spat with China right now over DDGs and other corn products that have that one trait in it. We have a herd of cattle that still hasn't completely recovered. We have ethanol that has had fairly decent margins, but have also gone through a couple of tough spots along the way, too. Do you think that they are willing to say this early into the 14-15 season that demand is going to be picking up?
Oh, I think they'll keep it firm. We'll see how the numbers falling through here. But as you mentioned there, corn demand is probably the most questionable. Whereas bean demand, it's up front here. Asia has already booked a bunch of the new crop demand, so we have to have the big yield to satisfy that demand. Whereas on the corn side, it's quite obvious China does not want our corn. However, though, they do want our milo and sorghum. That's still flying underneath the radar,
right.
For say.
Well, sorghum has really become a story, actually.
Correct. They seem to go to the areas that we're not watching. That part of the reason the corn's up a little bit today is a little concerns that the northern regions in China, a little dry, maybe their production number could drop slightly. But for them to come in and be a big buyer, U.S. corn, that's probably going to be on hold here for a while.
I'll turn your attention to what happens post-reporting to the balance of the week.
Well, it's a good question. Once we see the numbers, we'll start trading the September report. But once we have confirmation, we have a larger crop, I think, any type of rallying here is going to be met with some hedge interest, early harvest activity starting to pick up in the south. Once they dry out, we'll see that pick up a little bit more. But once we get past Labor Day, I have a feeling we're just going to try to drift and wander and try to find a home for this crop.
Do you foresee that tomorrow... tomorrow's numbers could be such a surprise as to start a leg, pick a direction, change a trend or push through suspected support levels or resistant levels?
Boy, it's hard to try to outguess, what the numbers are going to be. I think just confirmation of a large crop there is going to put us in sort of selling mode. I don't think we're going to be limit down or any sharp down. I think we're just going to drift lower in through here because as we move further down the road here, there's a lot of end users that need to start getting some coverage here as we go into this fall.
All right. Thank you very much, Kurt.
All right. Take care, Dave. Bye.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. He joins us every Monday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. In agricultural news, Smithfield Foods Incorporated said its second quarter earnings more than quadrupled as demand in its hog production segment remained strong. The meat producer said its most recent results benefited from its restructured and streamlined fresh pork and packaged meat operations. Smithfield's former pork unit now consists of two reportable segments, fresh pork and packaged meats. Smithfield reported earnings of $142.9 million compared with $32.4 million a year earlier. The new packaged meats segment had revenues of $1.73 billion from $1.45 billion a year earlier. Fresh pork sales increased to $1.61 billion from $1.32 billion in the year prior period. Hog production revenue remained virtually flat at $857 million. National Corn Growers Chief Executive Officer Rick Tolman is retiring in September. Tolman has dealt with some serious issues in his 14 years at the helm of the NCGA, including the ethanol blend wall, public campaigns against genetically engineered crops, trade barriers, and the ongoing debate over food versus fuel. Illinois farmer and NGCA President Gary Niemeyer said he believes Tolman will be remembered as a pioneer. Tolman's vision led to the development of an NCGA strategy to point the way for the corn industry to develop the renewable fuel standard, and that was before ethanol was big. Going forward, Tolman says China will continue to cast a big shadow across the soybean market and will hit the corn industry as well. A new Federal Reserve report on U.S. household finances says nearly 4 in 10 Americans said they were suffering financial stress in September of 2013, and more than a third said they were worse off than they were 5 years earlier. The survey results also suggest that many households are not adequately prepared for retirement. According to the Fed, 31% of non-retired respondents reported having no retirement savings or pension, including a shocking 19% of those ages 55 to 64. Conagra Foods Incorporated Chief Executive Gary Rotkin will retire next May. Conagra board member and former Hershey Company CEO Richard Lenny will lead a committee tasked with finding a replacement to Rotkin, who will participate in the process before he leaves at the end of the company's fiscal year. Rotkin joined Conagra Foods in October of 2005. Prior to that, he was chairman and chief executive officer of PepsiCo Beverages and Foods North America. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Dixon Springs is beautiful American country. It's also the birthplace of the modern no-till era for agriculture. Todd Gleason has more from Southern Illinois.
It was here in deep southern Illinois, close to the Shawnee National Forest and the furthest north cypress swamp in the United States, that the modern era of farming was challenged and changed. The lands roll, and when it rains, wash away into the Ohio and Mississippi rivers by the ton. Or at least they did, until a University of Illinois agronomist decided there had to be a better way to grow crops on the hillsides. For 37 years, George McKibben experimented and evangelized what was to become the modern era of no-till farming. Illinois agronomist Steve Ebelhair explains the effects of the research can be seen throughout the southern Illinois landscape.
Oh, absolutely, because back in the 30s and 40s, when the area was still under conventional tillage system, we saw a lot of really gully erosion. A lot of water coming off the fields, just saturated with soil, just dark soil moving off the profiles, off the landscapes. And now when you see a rain, you know, it's mostly clearer water, not a lot of soil movement because the residues are helping hold the soil in place. So we don't see the gullies that we once saw under conventional till system where the water has moved tremendous amounts of soil off the profiles.
What really made George McKibben's no-till experiments at Dixon Springs work as a soil-saving tool was pretty simple. And there's a reason it took so long for farmers to adopt the practice, meaning reasons it wasn't thought of or worked on prior to the 1960s. The technology to control weeds hadn't been developed and adapted to the farm before that time. The herbicides allowed McKibben's no-till experiments to work, says Ebelhair.
It's really the merger of good weed control herbicides coming into the market and the pioneering efforts of George McKibben that really made no-till take off in the early 60s into the 70s.
And then in the mid-1990s, when the herbicide-resistant varieties of soybeans were introduced, no-till really began to boom. The crop had been modified to withstand being sprayed with a herbicide, and no-till acres around the nation and in Illinois jumped. The first time no-till soybean acres outnumbered any other tillage method in the state of Illinois came in 2007, 41 years after George McKibben planted his first no-till experiment at Dixon Springs. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the cash grain market is Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Boy, showers were spotty on this side of the country, weren't they?
They were. We had some, well, we have some elevators in Iowa, and they, at our sales meeting this week, they, or last week, they were talking about nice 2 to 3 inch rains in Iowa, and western Illinois got some nice 1 inch rains, and it just fizzled out as it came across the state of Illinois, and we were the proud recipients of 1 to 2 tenths, I think.
Yeah, we had 2 tenths here on Friends Plaza. What do folk talk about when they get together for an annual meeting?
Well, you know, we're trying to work out logistics. You know, how much we can handle. Where the markets might be heading. What basis levels are going to do? What spreads are going to do? So we do a lot of that. Plus, we have some new computer software to train on. So it was. A true business meeting. It wasn't too much R&R. If it was, we would have been in Hawaii or somewhere warm, but unfortunately we were at our headquarters in Toledo, Ohio.
Talking about something potentially warm, that might be tomorrow at 11 a.m. when USDA releases its crop production and WASDE numbers. What are your thoughts?
Well, most of the analysts are expecting a big increase in the corn yield, as much as 5 bushels to the acre. I'm not sure if USDA is going to do it all in one fell swoop. They might go up 3 bushels one in 1 month, and then another bushel next month, and then finally another bushel the following month. I guess I would be surprised if they go up the whole 5 bushels in one month. But the crop ratings are very good, so I guess they could justify it if that's in fact what they did do. And beans, I think we're still a month away from knowing for sure what we've got in beans, so I'm not looking for much of a change in the bean yield from the USDA.
Do you think that USDA will provide enough bearish information in the kinds of numbers that you're talking about that it could impact December futures negatively?
Well, it could. I think the market has factored in a lot of that already, but still, there's no denying if they come out with 170 bushel corn yield, there's just no way to spin that. That's a lot of corn, and that probably is going to make us see new contract lows if they do in fact come out with that big of a number.
And where does corn find fair market value? There's a lot of talk around that 330, 335 level.
Yeah, it's been so long since we've been down to these levels. It's really hard to know where the end users are going to step in and say how, you know, that's low enough. I think we do have to keep the price low enough long enough to discourage other countries and maybe non-typical corn-growing areas here in the U.S. from growing corn next year. And we're already seeing that in South America. They're talking about planting 4, 5, 6% more bean acres and planting that much less corn. So the process has started as far as discouraging corn production, but it's going to take a while to chew through this 2 billion bushel surplus that we expect to have and get back to a more normal type of balance sheet.
Very quickly, your prices.
All right. Old crop corn tonight is $3.56, new corn $3.41, the old beans are $12.33, new beans are $10.53, and wheat is $5.31.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather in 2 minutes with the folk from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago. It's National Raspberry Bombay Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1673, Richard Mead was born. A British physician, he helped establish smallpox inoculation, and he wrote works on plague, smallpox, measles, and scurvy. In 1865, Guilford Pinchot was born. An American forester, he served as first chief of the U.S. Forest Service, and he championed the conservation of natural resources. He became chief of the New Forest Service in 1905 when the management of the forest reserves was transferred to the U.S. Department of Agriculture from the Department of the Interior. At that time, the nation had 60 forest reserves covering 56 million acres. in his 5 years in office. By 1910, those numbers increased to 150 national forests, covering 172 million acres. In 1874, Harry S. Parmelee of New Haven, Connecticut, patented the sprinkler head. And in 1903, the first U.S. patent for instant coffee was issued. The product was first introduced at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo in 1901. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at agricultural weather is meteorologist John Davis from Earth Risk Technologies out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, John.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Boy, those showers over the weekend that were supposed to be delivering solid rain sort of got to Iowa and then started fizzling as they went east, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they kind of did their thing in parts of eastern South Dakota and west central Minnesota, and those areas got some very good rainfall, but the areas that missed out included southeast Minnesota and the northeast portion of Iowa, and those are the areas that didn't get it last week, that most areas got it last week, and those are the areas that are still in need of getting some rainfall kind of to finish things off this season.
So we begin to wonder, are we beginning to see some yield loss in those areas?
Well, certainly from a bean standpoint, you know, you've got to get some more rains here from this point on as you go through the pod development process. And for those specific areas, it really comes down to one window, and that window is over the upcoming weekend and early next week. Nothing is expected over the next 5 days across that zone, but starting on Saturday and continuing on Sunday into Monday, that is going to be their primary opportunity for rainfall as we go through the next 10 or 12 days. And so that is going to be the time frame to focus on as to what kind of rains fall across the region. At this present time, it looks like a very good setup and a very good rain potential for that area as we go into that period. And it's going to be a matter of, you know, watching what the coverage is and the amounts that occur in that region during that time frame.
And temperatures should be warmer a little bit later in the week?
We're going to go through a major temperature change and kind of a major pattern configuration, you know, a realignment, if you will, as we go through the next week or two. So the cool weather that we've had, that is going to transition to a warmer than normal scenario that happens this weekend and runs through all of next week. And it looks like that this warmer pattern has some legs and likely will be with us through a pretty good chunk of the end of August. So kind of a rearrangement of the pattern, if you will, going from our cool pattern of late to a warmer than normal pattern here into the back half of August.
Well, that's like a 20 plus degree shift, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, keep in mind that normals are decreasing at this time of year, so above normal temperatures during the back half of August and above normal temperatures on August 1st are two different things. It by no means is it problematic, but certainly you're dealing with a situation where temperatures above normal with 80s and lower 90s, that's highly favorable at this stage of the game.
Anything else before we let you go this afternoon?
The big news is Eastern Australia, where very good rainfall is expected across Eastern Australia in their winter wheat acreage, just in time for that crop to begin spring growth. And so a big rain event across Queensland and New South Wales, that's a big shot in the arm for their wheat crop.
Thank you very much, John.
My pleasure, Dave.
John Davis of Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated. And he is out of Chicago, Illinois, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can get the USDA numbers on our website tomorrow. We'll begin to post them right after the numbers come out at 11. Go to our website, WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.